Is this house a good price compared to others in the area? Are prices going up or down? If I don't make an offer right this very moment, will I miss my chance? These are just some of the questions a home buyer might ask. And these are the sorts of questions an agent who is a Realtor can help answer. Because Realtors have the expertise, data, and access to specialty training to help you navigate the process of buying a home. They provide support, guidance, and have your back every step of the way. That's what Realtors do, because that's who we are. Realtors are members of the National Association of Realtors.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries, plus napkins, plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this, plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.
Healing trauma through presence. In this podcast, Eckhart answers questions about healing from childhood trauma. He says it is important to acknowledge the trauma and to work through it, but not to get stuck in it. He believes that while we may feel like a victim, it is not ultimately who we are. Eckhart shares stories about his own childhood trauma. He explains that his father had intense anger issues and abandoned Eckhart and his mother when he was just 11 years old. As an adult, Eckhart later realized that his father had been traumatized by his own childhood. He says dysfunctional family patterns are handed down generation after generation. And he says healing happens when we break the cycle, and that by practicing presence, we realize we're more than all the painful things we have experienced.
I think this is something many people will relate to. The person writes in, how can I overcome childhood traumas related to my parents and earliest experiences that I can clearly see are affecting my life today?
Right. Trauma would be some significant form of suffering that happened to you as a child, which is not uncommon. The question is, how does this trauma manifest in your present life and in the present moment? How does it diminish your enjoyment of life, your experience of the present moment? How does it bring about perhaps even dysfunctional behavior in you? And then you can, if you look at it closely, you can see it exists in you as probably an emotional field that I call it the pain body. It gets triggered. It may not always be on the surface, but in certain situations particularly, it gets triggered. And then it takes you almost, one could say, it takes you over partially or completely. So the trauma exists in you as an emotion, and it also exists in you as a thought or a stream of thinking, as a narrative in your mind, because these are certain things that happened. You remember these things, and you have a particular way of explaining them to yourself. And trauma, in most of these cases, means that some other human being, whether it's parents or caregivers or other or siblings or other humans, inflicted suffering on you that left these mental emotional wounds in you. So the only way you overcome is by intensifying your presence, so that when the trauma becomes reactivated in you and you experience it as an emotion or as a certain stream of thinking in your head, you're aware that this is what it is. You know where it comes from, and you can feel it. And as you become more present, the first thing that you are able to overcome will be your narrative, the narrative in your mind that's connected with certain traumatic events. The emotion is there, for the time being, all you can do is accept it when it comes, but recognize it for what it is. The question is whether the emotion still has a strong link with your thought processes. So in other words, you think about these things that happened and people that were involved in what happened. And this often, when you think about these things that happened in the past that were done to you, be very much aware of what kind of narrative you have in your mind and whether the narrative in your mind, whether you are a character in this narrative in your mind, and whether you, the character, we call it a narrative, so it's a kind of, let's say, it's like a story, whether you are a character that is a victim of these events, of these people. So, and that is actually a hidden way for the ego to thrive in you, is by creating, by using certain painful life experiences, especially from childhood, can even be after childhood, using them so that you form a victim identity around these events. So there are the perpetrators and you are the victim. I'm not denying that bad things and terrible things happen to people, and terrible things perhaps happen to you. The question is whether by reviving continuously these past events in your mind, you are creating, or ask yourself, am I creating an identity for myself that is mind-made, a conceptual identity, in which I am the victim? And that is a very seductive thing. The ego, as you may remember or know, the ego looks for superiority in whatever way it can. It needs to be superior to somebody or others to enhance its sense of self, it's a fictitious sense of self. It's a mind-made, it's a conceptual sense of self. And if you cannot be the great one who achieves the great successes, or it's better, has more things than others, can do more things than others, looks better than others, is stronger than others. These are ego identities too, conceptual identities. But many people don't have anything. They don't have much more than others. They are not better looking than others. They don't know more than others, can't do more than others. So where does the ego go if you don't have anything? So in the case of trauma, but not only in the case of past trauma, even in many other cases, the ego seeks itself. It seeks to continuously replenish itself by building up a victim identity for yourself.
It's one thing falling in love with a house, picturing yourself moving in and calling it home, and quite another navigating the world of price negotiating, mortgage lenders, and finding the budget that works best for you. An agent who's a realtor can make understanding that world easier. Realtors have the expertise, access to proprietary data, and tools to help you get from imagining living somewhere to actually doing it. That's the kind of help we can provide. Because that's who we are. Realtors are members of the National Association of Realtors.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries, plus napkins, plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this, plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.
I'm not denying that bad things happen to you, but are you creating, this is a very, very thing you need to be very much aware of, are you creating an identity which is ultimately a fictitious identity, it's a conceptual identity, which is a narrative-based identity, Are you creating a victim identity for yourself out of these events? If you are, then that's the ego. And once you have established that, it's not easy to get out of it. I don't know whether that's the case with you, the questioner. You may have already gone beyond victim identity and just experienced the trauma as emotion that comes up periodically, or certain kinds of reactivity in certain situations that are based on the traumatic events. So you have to see for yourself whether it's primarily emotional, whether the trauma survives in you as the pain body, or which is emotional suffering, or whether the trauma also survives in you through continuously dwelling on narratives in your mind in which your victim identity is continuously strengthened by reviving the narratives in your mind. You think about these events, you maybe even talk about them, think about them again. And you have to, the perpetrators then, you're also constructing an identity for them. Why do humans inflict suffering on others? And of course, it is to do with the evolutionary stage of human development, because humans have inflicted unbelievable amount of suffering on their fellow humans in people's personal lives, and collectively even more. You go to a history book and see how many millions upon millions of humans have been, even in the 20th century, have been killed by other humans, not just in warfare between nations, even within nations, governments killed their own people, millions of them. So it's an unbelievable amount, and this is to do with the unconsciousness in humanity. They are... as Jesus is supposed to have said on the cross, forgive them, for they know not what they do. Now, what does that mean? It means that they know not what they do means they are completely unconscious. They are at the mercy of the egoic sense of self. They are unconscious. Forgive them means recognize that they manifest this unconscious evolutionary stage of human development, but don't make an identity out of it for these people. Don't say this is who they are. So neither this is not who they are, whoever has inflicted suffering on you, and you are, and the victim is not who you are. So that you get out of conceptual identities that are built around certain traumatic events, coming back to your question. So we often, by the way, you also need to do that collectively, because it's very seductive to create a collective victim identity. So you, when you belong to a group, or you think mentally, in this group, bad things have been done to this group. And of course, yes, humans have inflicted, certain groups of humans have inflicted suffering on other groups of humans. And we're not denying that. It's to do with human unconsciousness. But the fallacy is that if we build up an identity around that, that is a conceptual identity in the mind, which is ego, that keeps you trapped in ultimately the state of unconsciousness yourself. So you recognize the perpetrators did what they did because there was not enough consciousness there to do otherwise. Coming back to just a little example from my life, my father was prone to, my parents were still married and I was a child, between the age of 1 and 11, they were living together with me. My father was at intense anger in him. Later I realized why, but we don't need to go into that. It's to do with certain traumatic events in his childhood. So he could be triggered by a word or somebody said something. And there was always stress when he was there, because it was like an unexploded bomb that you had living with you, could go off at any moment into intense anger. And later I realized, how could I blame him for that? He was at the mercy of that conditioning in himself. It was created by his own suffering. And the people who inflicted that suffering on him, they did it because they had their own traumatic events in their childhood. It can go back generations and generations and generations. So the unconsciousness is passed on in certain ways to children and their descendants and so on. And so it was never his identity. It was never who he was. He couldn't help it. He was at the mercy of that conditioning. And so once you recognize that, then you no longer construct an identity for these perpetrators. You see what they did. Forgiveness means you recognize that it happened as a result of human unconsciousness. It doesn't necessarily mean that you may want to even spend time with them. Forgiveness doesn't mean that necessarily. And you may want to continue not have contact with them anymore. That's possible too, but there's no longer an internal narrative around it that strengthens your own sense of identity. So getting rid of the victim identity is very important as an important step in overcoming the remnants of past trauma. So when you recognize it, then you see the narrative in your mind, then it's simply you rephrase the narrative as you were the victim of human unconsciousness. As we all are to a greater or lesser degree, you were the victim of human unconsciousness, but it was part of the evolutionary process of humanity. But the strange thing is, humans do not evolve except through suffering, challenges. That you ask this question, the questioner, and you are here asking this question because of what happened to you. So you are awakening spiritually because you need to overcome the trauma. If there was no trauma that you needed to overcome, you wouldn't be here. You would be, I don't know, you would be sitting somewhere drinking a beer and watching television. What else is there to do? So these things are very helpful. Be grateful that that's there. Be careful with the narrative in your mind so that the mental processes no longer create a perpetrator identity or a victim identity. And so then that becomes, once you're no longer at the mercy of the thought processes, then all you're left with is the emotion that comes up from time to time. And the emotion no longer controls your thinking. That's the important step in overcoming trauma, pain body. If the emotion, you're no longer doing the emotional thinking that's connected to that past event. So when the pain body arises, you're able to observe it directly, to be aware of it directly. It no longer rises up into your mind and reactivates the narrative in your mind about what they did to me, what they or he or she did to me, the dreadful, or maybe it was God, what God did to me, or how unfairly life treated me, or that when the emotion rises up into your mind, it reactivates this old narrative. And that, as you become more present, the emotion will remain for a while. But the link between the emotion and your thought processes gets severed. And that's the most important step, because if you do not sever or cut the link between the emotion and your thought processes, if that doesn't happen, then there's a vicious circle, because your thought processes that continuously revive the traumatic event feed the emotion. Periodically, which is the pain body, the thought process is feeds the emotion. Then the emotion rises back into your mind and feeds your thinking. And that is a vicious cycle in which some humans are trapped until they die. And so cutting the link between your thought processes and the emotion is vital. It can only happen through presence, so that your thought processes and your thinking then no longer produces suffering. Your thinking is no longer ego-based. Of course, you remember the event, but it no longer has an ego around it. And what you're left with then is the emotion that will come up from time to time and may still, from time to time, create certain reactions if there's not enough presence yet. And as presence grows through the practice of awareness in everyday life, not just when you're being challenged, but in everyday life, practice as much as possible to be present. We've spoken about that. Be present whenever you can. And as presence grows in you, the pain body begins to become transmuted. Whether it becomes totally transmuted in your lifetime, we don't know. But ultimately, it doesn't matter because you're no longer at the mercy of it. It is no longer your identity. Your identity is no longer determined by the traumatic event. And that's an enormous liberation. Because if your essential identity, if you believe that identity is to a large extent created by the traumatic event, then you're trapped in ego, and you're trapped in unconsciousness, and you're trapped in resentment, and you're trapped in suffering. So that's so important. So your identity is no longer derived from thought processes. Your identity comes from a deeper place, the place of presence. You are the presence. And that's liberation. You are not, your identity is no longer determined by or derived from the trauma. And that is how gradually the trauma diminishes. As long as you identify it, as long as it determines who you feel or think you are, you cannot become free. It could go on for, if you lived for hundreds of years, go on for hundreds of years. And you probably pass on that particular conditioning even to others.
It's one thing falling in love with a house, picturing yourself moving in and calling it home, and quite another navigating the world of price negotiating, mortgage lenders, and finding the budget that works best for you. An agent who's a realtor can make understanding that world easier. Realtors have the expertise, access to proprietary data, and tools to help you get from imagining living somewhere to actually doing it. That's the kind of help we can provide. Because that's who we are. Realtors are members of the National Association of Realtors.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries, plus napkins, plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this, plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.
So, this is I've just explained the process. It's terribly important, and a time will come, if it is not already now, where you become grateful for the trauma, because it forced you into awakening. And that's the grace that's hiding behind every seemingly negative event. It's always there.
Good evening, Eckhart. First of all, namaste, and thank you for the profound change you and King have brought to my life.
Thank you.
My question is related to the inner body meditation. So I've been practicing it regularly in these past few weeks. And you've mentioned before that the success criterion is the sense of joy. During this meditation practices, I think I've experienced moments of emptiness in the best sense of the word, like, you know, moments where I feel a deep peace, where, you know, there are no emotions or thoughts whatsoever, but there's no joy either. I mean, it's like pure emptiness. So I'm just wondering if there's any other success criterion other than the sense of joy, or is this a just another different type of joy you are referring to? In other words, am I doing this correctly? That's my question.
Yeah, well, that's a good question, yeah. It's probably best not to look for joy, but just to be present, but if possible, intensify the sensing of presence a bit more, so that the presence, to be present is both active and a passive thing. The passive thing is because when you totally accept, for example, when you totally accept this moment as it is, the portal into presence opens up to complete, because you're completely okay with this moment as it is. So complete acceptance of this moment is the portal into presence, one of the portals into presence, complete acceptance of what is this moment. And that's, one could say, is the passive, or one could almost say the yin aspect of presence. It's that, the same like the images of Mary. It's a female, it accepts, the hands are stretched out, it receives whatever is there, it allows whatever is there, or Kuan Yin, or whatever it may be, that's presence. There's another, the other aspect of presence is active and is more yang, and there's an intensity behind it. The two kind of come together. So when you accept this moment as it is, you might think, accepting kind of as, I accept this. But there's also, there needs to be at the same time an intensity of presence. And with that intensity, you sense more acutely what presence is. There's no stress behind it, but there's a high degree of alertness. But in that alertness, you're not really looking for anything, not even for joy. Because if you're looking for something, then that's the very reason why you can't find it. So there's an intensity of presence, and all you feel is that intensity of presence. And I sometimes compare it to the sword of presence. The sword of presence cuts through time. And then in the presence, you don't look for joy. Because the more aware you become of the presence, and that's already a wrong way of putting it, because we're using language, we're creating subject and object. When I say you become aware of presence, it's not really the case, because you and presence are the same. You essentially are presence. So you become aware of yourself, but you still have a subject and object. There's a self-awareness, that self, and that is, you become more deeply aware of yourself. There's a self-awareness in you. And then you reach a point where that self-awareness is very, very alive. You may not call it joy. You may have certain ideas associated with joy that don't actually fit here. But there's an intense feeling of aliveness. And this is the light. You are the light of the world, Jesus said. You are the light of the world. But you have to know that. It's not enough to say, okay, I believe you. So that's not it. He said it because he wanted you to know it directly. And when you know this light that is the essence of who you are, which is awareness, we could call that joy. But it may not even be the right word for it. There's an intense aliveness. It's lovely. It's wonderful to be to know yourself at this deepest level. It's so alive. Maybe forget about the word joy, because it might have associations that don't fit here. It could be, some people call it, there's some spiritual teachers who use the term happiness. I don't really use happiness to describe it, because happiness belongs to the world of gain and loss. one you get happy. Oh, I'm so happy. It's not that kind of thing. But because the words are limited, sometimes certain spiritual teachers say your true nature is happiness. Some teachers have said, some Indian teachers, some others, your true nature is happiness. Again, I know exactly what they mean and they're right, but it can be misleading because what is usually called happiness is something very superficial compared to what we are talking about here. So let's forget about joy and just sense the intense aliveness that is the essence of who you are. That's enough. Whatever you want to call it is fine. You don't need to call it anything. That would probably be best. In order to take you there, the words, as you know, the words I use are pointers. They're just signposts. Some pointers work better than other pointers for certain people. And that is why I use a variety of pointers, because some work for one person, but not for another person. So I use other pointers because they might work better for other people. So joy is not a pointer that works for you. That's, forget about it. Intense aliveness, just, that's all. And then it deepens, and whatever it becomes then, who knows, maybe some, you'll find some other word if you wanted to talk about it, to describe it. So that's really what it is. But don't look for any experience or anything like that, because the thing that what you're looking for is where you're looking from. What you're looking for is where I believe St. Francis even said that. What you are looking for is where you're looking from. So if you're looking for joy, then eventually you have to forget about joy and just be aware of what does it mean I'm looking for? It's an intensity of consciousness. So it's like having a flashlight, and the flashlight is looking for itself. Where am I? And at some point, the flashlight becomes aware, oh, I'm actually what I was looking for. I am the light. I was looking for the light there. That's how it is. It's very hard to talk about these things.
Thank you. I really appreciate it.
Okay. Eckhart, I'm going to sneak one final question in here to end our session this evening. Why is consciousness interested in becoming conscious of itself? What's the problem with remaining unconscious of itself? What does consciousness gain by becoming conscious of itself?
No, because you and the universe are not two separate things. You are an essential part of the universe. When you ask these big questions, it's often more helpful to rephrase the question, and you're more likely to find the answer within yourself if you rephrase the question, and then it's no longer abstract. So your first question is, why is consciousness interested in becoming conscious of yourself? Rephrase the question, ask yourself, why am I interested in becoming conscious? Why am I interested in becoming conscious? And I'm sure there's a reason why you are here. There's a reason why you ask that question. And when you look into why am I interested in becoming more, you will find an answer why you want to become more conscious. And the next question is, what is the problem with consciousness remaining unconscious of itself? Rephrase the question, what is the problem with me remaining unconscious? Ask yourself the question, what's wrong with me if I just remain unconscious? You will find a very good answer why you don't want to remain unconscious. For one, you don't want to suffer anymore. You don't want to inhabit a nightmare anymore. And there are many other answers that will come to you if you ask, what is the problem with me remaining unconscious? You will know all very well what the problem is with you remaining unconscious. What does consciousness gain by becoming conscious of itself? What do I gain by awakening? What do I gain becoming more conscious? And again, these questions you can answer for yourself, but then at the same time, you will have found the answer to these bigger questions that you asked about universal consciousness itself. So with this question, because you are a microcosm of the totality of the whole, and all the important things that you need to know through intensifying self-observation, the answers are all in you, and I've just shown you where you, how you easily you can actually find them. So, and then the questions are no longer abstract, because the way you ask them, they're abstract. You can say, oh, think about it. No, this is very concrete. This is very, this all concerns you, because you are consciousness wanting to awaken. And your life will show you why. And there's the answer.
Thank you.
I'm Oprah Winfrey, and you've been listening to Eckhart Tolle, Essential Teachings, the podcast. You can follow these essential teachings on Spotify or wherever you listen to podcasts. If you haven't yet, go to Spotify and follow this podcast. Join us next week for more enlightened teachings from Eckhart Tolle. Thank you for listening.
A lot can happen between falling in love with a house online and owning it, between imagining living there and breathing in your new home for the first time. Having an advocate who can help you navigate the complex world of financing, inspections, negotiating, analyzing the market, and talking through any anxieties that may pop up, that can make all the difference. That's what the expertise of a Realtor can do for you. Realtors are members of the National Association of Realtors and bound by a code of ethics, because that's who we are.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries, plus napkins, plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this, plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, Essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.